now like to call upon Perry Anderson, the editor of New Left Review, a paper with which Isaac Deutscher had established friendly, if often critical, relations.
Other speakers tonight have stressed that Isaac Deutscher was a historian, a Marxist, and a revolutionary. I would like to say a few words about the connections between these three dimensions of him as a man. In particular, I would like to say something about the form of his writings, that is, their style, and the content of them, that is, their themes. Deutscher's writings on Soviet history and society are very much more than a mere local chronicle of what happened in Russia from 1900 to the present day. Their sweep, their depth, and their brilliance won him an audience throughout the world. But in the 30 years of his life and work in England, it is significant that he was never given any place in a university until, at the end of his life, he was invited to give the Trevelyan Lectures in Cambridge as a visitor. There was no accident in this. Deutscher's work was profoundly threatening to capitalist society and to its ideological institutions. He was hated and feared as a Marxist by the mediocre academicians who dominate these institutions. They did everything to ensure that he was never allowed to teach a younger generation personally and directly, even on one occasion, vetoing in desperation his nomination to a university chair when it had already been offered to him. The result of this long and relentless ostracism was that Deutscher had to earn much of his living as a journalist in London, as Marx did before him. That journalism produced essays of great and permanent importance, as it did with Marx. But those who saw him, obliged to devote so much of his time to it, were aware that it was at a cost to his historical work itself. His biography of Lenin might now perhaps have been written if he had not had these constant financial pressures on him. This was the daily price he paid for his Marxism in this country. It was not just the fact of his Marxism which made him so feared by bourgeois historians, of course. It was its quality. Deutscher himself once wrote that he had a, and I quote here, heightened sensitivity to the style of all reasoning on social and political problems. He goes on, I thought that I could recognize the quality of any socialist or communist statement by its language and form. Now this dictum certainly applies to his own work. His prose, as all of you will know, was superb as English. But this was not just a literary gift, this is the point I want to insist on. It expressed very deeply Deutscher's relationship to Marxism as a philosophy. Nothing is more striking in his work than its complete freedom from the technical language of Marxism, what is usually called its jargon. This freedom was in fact the measure not of Deutscher's emancipation from Marxism as a philosophy, but of his effortless control of it. His Marxism was classical in an age of alloys. That is to say, it was so natural to him that he could speak it and use it without resorting to any specialized or technical idiom. Jargon is only the index of the difficulty which a Marxist has in overcoming his normal, inherited habits of thought and speech. It is like the arbitrary, clumsy constructions of someone who is learning but has not truly mastered a foreign language. Deutscher, on the contrary, moved within Marxism so freely and spontaneously that he made it appear often as simply identical with intelligent argument. C. Wright Mills once described Deutscher's historical work to me as a gigantic insinuation. An insinuation of what? Of the truth and actuality of Marxism, of course. It was an insinuation, of course, because it never stated the axioms of Marxism systematically and explicitly. Deutscher's work was its own proof of them in practice. Deutscher's classical clarity was thus unique amongst the great Marxist intellectuals of the West. Virtually all the other creative Marxists of recent decades, Gramsci, Lukács, Sartre, Althusser or Marcuse, have expressed themselves in a difficult and complex vocabulary, often very removed from ordinary language. I do not think this is a criticism of them. They produced the Marxism they could, which is our Marxism, in the insurmountable historical conditions in which they found themselves. Deutscher, who came from the borderlands of the October Revolution, was heir to a different tradition. It gave him an ease with Marxism that allowed him to write massive historical works which yet won a worldwide, non-sectarian audience. These works were themselves something of a contrast to much Western Marxism. They were not a philosophical discourse on method, such as has preoccupied so many contemporary Marxists, from Lukács to Sartre or Althusser. They were about the central, substantive problem of 20th century socialism, the destiny of the revolution. Deutscher's writings on Russia, which were apparently particular and specific works of history, were actually also universal elements of any Marxist theory. For no socialist or revolutionary politics today is possible without a preliminary judgment on the major experimental laboratory which the century has so far provided to verify or modify Marxist ideas of socialism. In Deutscher's writings, history becomes politics, and politics becomes revolutionary theory. There was no accident in this. Deutscher, for those who knew him personally, was as a man above all a revolutionary. It was his revolutionary passion which determined the distinctive focus and themes of his work, once circumstances had separated him from the possibility of active political practice. Deutscher, exiled from Poland, rejoined the revolution by writing the epic of it, an epic which is also, in a sense, the theory of it. Deutscher, whom circumstances isolated from political struggle so relentlessly after the 30s, succeeded in being more immediately and truly political to the end than any other major Marxist writer of his generation. He was a model of the revolutionary thinker in the Bolshevik tradition. In contemporary Britain, nothing was more unfamiliar or more exemplary.
I should now like to call on K.S. Carroll, also a old friend of Isaac Deutscher's and a fellow journalist.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to begin this tribute to Isaac Deutscher with few souvenirs from a country which was object of his passion and study, namely from Soviet Union. I was born in Poland from the same background or comparable background to Isaac Deutscher, but from one generation later. And as it happened, by the vicissitude of war, at the age of 15, I was confronted with the Soviet reality in practice. I happened to be a Soviet citizen because Poland didn't exist anymore and had to share for seven years, the life of the generation of Russians, the same as myself.
A little louder.
Close to the microphone. There is usually an image that Stalin's Russia and the Russia of that period was one vast jail. I won't deny that there were jails in Russia, and I was myself for a time in one of them, but the image is not true. In Stalin's Russia, people could and were allowed to discuss and to speak, particularly in privacy, and particularly young people, like my friends with whom I was in the army and subsequently in university. But what we were discussing was mostly about the present, without knowing too much what was happening in the past after the revolution, but with some feeling that those were dangerous things, that a lot of people have suffered from them, and that it is better to look only for the future without caring too much about the past and about discussing too much about ideas. We were studying, of course, Marxism, or what was the version of Marxism which was in the official manuals. This was just those were things which are admitted as a kind of obvious truth and were applying mostly to the world outside, because after all, what Lenin was writing concerned for three quarters, or if not four-fifths of his work, Tsarist Russia and the society pre-revolutionary, how to make a revolution in that kind of a country. And this Marxism was, I wouldn't say something which was passing completely and without influence, but was not considered as a possible instrument to discuss the present or the future. The present and the future was connected with Stalin, because for us, for this generation of Russia, after all, it was Stalin who led us during the war. And even if we knew that probably the man was sometime rather dangerous, there was also a conviction, where is Stalin, there is a victory, and therefore that it was better to follow that pattern. But, and particularly I must say that in the years of 44, 45, on the eve of victory, there was a kind of liberalization in Russia. One could speak much more freely, and there was a period of great hopes for the future, hopes which were connected with the prospect of the imminent victory. But nobody had a real idea what this better future will really be and how it will happen. We were expecting something, hoping for, but as I repeat, without discussing neither ideas nor the past history, those closed chapters were supposed to be closed forever, or rather irrelevant. As it happens, you know that in the years immediately after the victory, already in 45, started things which we didn't expect. Our comrades who were coming from prisoner camps, instead of being with us, were taken into other camp, other kind of camps, which were called checking camps. They were started immediately, nearly again, a kind of new wave of difficulties. And the contrast between the official rhetorics and the daily life was becoming more and more unbearable. Well, nobody could explain what it was and how it was, and that was at that time that I left in 46 Russia. And two or three years later, I came to Paris with again those feelings that after all, it was a country which suffered more than any other for the victory during the war. It was the country in which I was brought up, and that I didn't want to be against it. And in the same time, it was a country for us whose shortcoming I knew too well from my experience as be able to deny them or to defend them. And with this divided feeling, with this divided mind, when I started to contemplate the career of journalist, I had the occasion first to read Isaac Deutscher's book on Stalin and subsequently to meet him. It will be an exaggeration, and I don't think that any tribute needs exaggeration to say that this one book has explained to me everything what I lived in my experience. But it is certainly a truth that this book and this hypothesis for the future which Isaac Deutscher has brought in this book was really a revelation for me, something which